Home. Home. Shut up. I'm listening to the Next English Podcast.
You're listening to the Next English Podcast, a podcast for English learners at B1, B2 and C1 levels.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Next English Podcast. Here is another episode for you. And this time I'm joined by Glenn. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Hello, Jan-Erik. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So you are from the United States. You're American.
Correct. I was born in New York and then moved to San Francisco, California, where I lived for over 30 years.
But now you are in Vietnam. And I'm meeting you here in the city I have been living in for more than 1 year, Da Nang, the city of Da Nang. It's the second time seeing you, but you're not living here. You're here just on holiday, right?
That is correct. My home base is Ho Chi Minh City, where I've lived since December 2019.
Nice. So that's been more than 3 years or
More than four
years.
Now.
More than 4 years. Okay. So you moved there before COVID hit.
Just before, by less than 6 weeks or so.
Wow. It must have been a bit of a ride then.
It was, and almost had the feeling, no one knew, of course, that COVID was going to come, but had the feeling that something was up and I needed to get out of San Francisco. And
right.
Was sensitive or had that silent feeling, and no one saw this, but turned out it was correct.
Do you think you're a psychic or something? Do you think you have some supernatural abilities or stuff like that?
I wish I would be far more wealthier and successful if I was a clairvoyant.
Yeah. Well, you had some sort of feeling. You felt it in your bones, as we say. Yeah, so... Okay, interesting. So now you're in Da Nang. Is that one of your places to go to in Vietnam?
Da Nang is probably my favorite place to holiday in Vietnam, and I usually come here about twice a year, certainly more than once, and this might be my seventh trip here, starting as a tourist in 2017, mm-hmm. which opened my eyes to Vietnam, and as I'm sure we'll talk about, got the ball rolling for me to permanently settle in Vietnam. Then came back in 2018, 2020, 2022, 3 and 4.
Right, so except the COVID year.
Except for the lockdowns.
Yeah, okay, makes sense. But this one is slightly more special for you, I think, because you invited your sister as well.
That's correct. My sister and brother-in-law are visiting from California. They have never been to Asia, never been to Vietnam, and I'm so happy.
How does it feel to like show them everything?
It's fantastic. They are loving it.
Yeah, they're
loving it, and they're spending a full month. So they're doing it the right way, not rushing. And so I have the chance to show them the whole country from the south to the north. This is our second stop. Tomorrow will be Hanoi.
So obviously they must have had some expectations because I imagine you have sent them some photos before, right? Your sister. And so she had some sort of idea about how you live here. But I wonder, did you speak about this to her, with her? Does it match her expectations?
It's an interesting question, Zdenek. She's married now, coming on 25 years, and they both had the feeling of they generally understood why I did and continue to do what I'm doing, but now that they're here and they see it, they get it completely.
Great. So like, let's learn a bit more about your background. Obviously I know some stuff, but not my listeners yet. So what's interesting about you is that you used to have as you describe it yourself, a high-end job in the USA. So what were you doing, if it's not top secret or anything?
Not at all. I was a sole practice attorney in San Francisco, California, from 1997 until moving here in late 2019. So about 22 and a half years. I graduated law school in California, San Francisco, and passed the bar in 1995. Knew I wanted to do something international before I had to get a real job. Mm-hmm. So worked in Antwerp, Belgium, and then came back and knew I wasn't a big business law firm guy. I started clerking for small and sole practice offices. Did that for about a year, year and a half. Worked with lovely, wonderful people who were mentors. And at the age of about 27, was told, you're ready. And I said, ready for what?
Hi, my name is Marek and I'm from Poland. I like the Achiever's Chamber because it helps me to build up my confidence in English.
And I said, ready for what? They said, open your office. So I started with two clients, a typewriter, a black and white laptop, and approximately 5,000 USD in the bank, and turned that into a long-term business that lasted more than 22 years.
So you were pretty successful, and it's sort of like whenever some like I meet someone from, of course, from this industry or from law, it sort of reminds me of obviously Better Call Saul. And so I'm sure you're very, very well familiar with that, right?
Funny you mention it. That show almost hits too close to home for me. Because I was a sole practitioner and a litigator. I've only seen bits of it because I see too much of myself in it. And it makes me uncomfortable.
Hang on. Does it mean that you were also like a little bit crook as well?
Or? No. I'm very proud of that, actually, Zdenek. And yeah. I do mean this, that my mentors taught me the right way. But one thing that they did tell me is that you are going to be tempted. And one of the best lessons that my mentor who recently passed, very successful lawyer in San Francisco, told me, and I'll never forget it. He said, Glenn, the only thing you have as a sole practitioner is your name on the door. That's all. That's the only asset you have. So never do anything to tar your name that's on the door. And so that stuck with me.
Yeah. But there is that temptation. And so do you think that the TV show Better Call Saul and the universe, the Breaking Bad universe, mm-hmm. and Saul himself, Saul Goodman, is that something that exists? Or does it happen?
Zdenek,
are there unscrupulous, is that the word, unscrupulous lawyers?
That would be the correct term. And yep. I've seen that rabbit hole go all the way to very, very bad depths, which includes death. Includes addiction, includes jail, includes losing your license. I've seen it.
Mafia practices and all that.
I don't want to talk about that story, but there was a very, very famous murder of an attorney in my home city when I started out. I did know the attorney. Wouldn't say he was a mentor to me, but he was nice to me. And he ended up dead with a gunshot wound under very, very strange circumstances. No arrests were ever made.
Oh my goodness, man.
So I've seen it.
That's heavy stuff.
Yep.
But so you did this for a long, long time. And then suddenly you had enough of it? How did you end up here?
That's a great question. So I always had that wanderlust in me. I had two goals when I started out as a sole practitioner. And they're both modest ones. One was a short-term goal, which was just to make it and keep your business open for 5 years. Most businesses, whether it's a pizza shop or online clothing or a law office,
yeah.
I would say 80 to 90% do not last more than 5 years. Mm. I made a lot of sacrifices. I moved to home for most of that time so that I could afford to pay the rent in a very expensive city in San Francisco. So I made that. Then I accomplished that goal. The second goal was the long-term one, which was after roughly 20 years, was to have a certain income figure in mind. I did more or less hit that number. Of course, it's very up and down. You don't receive a paycheck every, 2 weeks or every month. But on the whole, with all the ups and all the downs, I did hit it. But I found that I wasn't satisfied.
In what way?
It wasn't enough. As the cost of living in the Western world increased and salaries don't. But as a sole and small business person, and you really saw this with COVID all throughout the world, which just crushed small businesses, crushed them. Mm-hmm. Something like 2/3 didn't make it. Remember, I closed about less than 2 months before COVID. But this had been going on since the 2009 recession. Yeah. So we're talking about 10 years where you would say you were crunched at both ends. And by that, I mean that your operating costs, utilities, insurance, necessities were getting higher and higher. But your income, what people were willing to pay, was going lower.
Yeah.
And we call that being squeezed at both ends.
And you were not the only person that this was happening to.
Oh, like, not at all. Not at all. So, and again, there's a lot of hard work, also serendipity, luck involved. I had big years. I had terrible years. It was always up and down. But after 22 years, I certainly could have kept it going. I had a mature business. But in the end, I felt like, especially with the cost of living and taxes going up in the Western world, and it's no different whether you're from the big cities in America or from the big cities in Europe or Australia. It's no different.
It's happening in the UK. It's happening everywhere, man.
Everywhere. And it's a burnout. You're a hamster in the wheel.
Yeah, and you realize it's a rat race and all that.
It's a rat race. But also the third goal was to, and I mean this, was to improve as many people's lives as possible. And my sister has the same ambition. She was a social worker. Mm. We wanted to change the world. Yep. And that's a tough job. But in my own little way, we did it.
Mm-hmm. But then came a point where, and because of the circumstances, the political and global pandemic and all that, so... When did this idea happen? How did it come about?
That's a great question. So I went to law school in 1994 in Bangkok, Thailand for 3 months. It was a program that changed the views of a lot of students on that program. About three of my colleagues ended up working in Bangkok or in Asia afterwards. I still keep in touch with them. In 2013, one of my close colleagues from that trip invited me to Myanmar to help him set up a small office. It was at a time when I was on a low. The money was not high that year or for that few years. He caught me at the right time. I said, of course, I'd like to go.
Yeah.
And what was so remarkable about that experience, doing about 2.5 months in Myanmar, was seeing Bangkok, the change from 1994 till 19, 20 years later, 2013, 2014. In 94, Thailand was very much, you know, I may be unfair to say a poor country, but, you know, developing, lower tier developing country. I show up there in 2013 and it's rich, it's wealthy. A small example of this in 2013, now Zdenek, for your viewers, I'm very small. I'm a short guy. I'm about 168 centimeters and weigh about anywhere between 68 and 66 to 68 kilograms. When I was in school in Thailand, I was the biggest kid around.
Yeah.
People looked up at me. I had never experienced that before.
And you liked it.
It was different.
Was it empowering?
It was different, and I'd be lying if I say I didn't enjoy it.
I understand. It's the same with me whenever I mention the fact that it's easier for me, and I've said this on the podcast. It is easier for me to meet a girl in Vietnam than it is for me to meet a girl. And when I say girl, I mean a beautiful girl,
mm-hmm.
than in Europe.
Well,
right? So I'm quite picky when it comes to girls, let's say. I mean...
What was amazing was returning back 20 years later, and I reverted back to being the small guy and small frame guy that I am. So in 20 years, in one generation... Thailand went from a, you know, lower tier developing country to a massively wealthy country. Yeah. And that set the alarms in my head because I saw my own society even then in decline.
Crumbling.
Yeah. And I thought, well, I know which side of the curve I want to be on. I want to be on the one going up.
Where you feel like you mean something.
And things are improving. Yeah.
That's how I feel as well, a little bit, yeah.
Ah, so then... 4 years later in 2017, when my own situation back home got better, I took a 30-day holiday to Southeast Asia, to countries I'd never been to.
Yeah.
The last stop was Vietnam. The first stop happened to have been Da Nang. And then from there to Hue and Saigon. And I saw what I saw in Thailand years ago. And I said, okay, I get this.
You still remembered it?
it was very much, here's a developing country.
It's a bit different, right? The people are slightly different. The mentality is different, but there are a lot of things that obviously...
In Saigon and Ho Chi Minh City, however you wish to say it, we say both.
Yeah.
As a native New Yorker, I saw that Saigon is roughly the New York of Asia. People have big personalities. They're loud. They're boisterous. They're outgoing. So, and of course, coming from California, where there's a massive Asian and Vietnamese population, I knew it wouldn't be that difficult of an adjustment for me.
Right,
it proved not to be.
You already knew them. It's just the shoe was on the other foot. And okay.
Absolutely. Saigon, I would say Saigon is about one-third New York City, one-third Asia, Bangkok, Hong Kong, and one-third French Indochina, or less. It's not very colonial. We're looking now at a scenery here of kilometers and kilometers of wealthy development. By the way, most of this wasn't here 7 years ago when I first came here. And if we looked in either direction, literally 20 to 30 kilometers of nothing but five-star housing and resorts.
It's mainly these high-rise buildings, the hotels, the skyscrapers, these big ones, right? They really stand out. And I used to date one girl here, and she told me about this as well, yeah.
But you don't really see this in the Western world, if you think about it.
No.
I mean, yes, you see new developments, but they're small. It might be one development on a block, not an entire neighborhood, not an entire city.
It's not so striking, right?
Correct.
This really hits you, and you're like, whoa.
But that's Asia. There's very little...
Happening fast.
Yes, there's very little thoughts about the past here. Everything is the future, which I quite like, because their future is... better than their past, and let's face it, for us Westerners,
it's going to be the other way around.
Correct.
Sorry for finishing your words, but I knew what you were going to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It looks like it right now, doesn't it? It's a bit glum.
Gloomy. I have not been back since the day I left, and I don't want that. I don't want to. I'd rather visit places in Asia, whether it's Taiwan, Japan, back to Bangkok, or Vietnam's such a beautiful country. I haven't seen all of it, but been impressed with everywhere I've gone.
Nice. So, okay. So what do you think are the best things about the Vietnam then? So it's the people, is it the food? What is it for you then? So remind ourselves before we forget, we also want to talk about what you do here.
Sure.
We haven't said that yet.
Yeah, let's start with there. So I work for a very large language center in Ho Chi Minh City. They are the, I believe, number one language center in Vietnam.
Nice.
Probably 60,000 or more students, mostly in the southern part of the country. They do have two campuses here in Da Nang. They do have some campuses in Hanoi. I have always been with them. I was full-time.
Yep.
But after COVID and that crazy experience, I reverted back to being part-time.
Yeah. More flexible.
Yes, I work weekends only, which allows me to have a better life. But of course, since I'm older, I'm able to do that. I was able to spend what was meant to be my future savings. But let's just say the future is now. But it's for a better quality of life. So I teach part-time for a large language center, which means that they teach after school hours. They teach weeknights and weekends. So
you only do the weekends now?
Correct. On Friday night until Sunday late afternoon, which is an oddball schedule. Does make it difficult if you're dating or seeing people who have 9-to-5 jobs. I don't have that. It's the opposite. The good news is that I do have all of the weekdays except for Friday night.
How many hours would you teach on a Saturday then?
Saturday is my biggest day. That can be 7 hours. Can be. Of course, the schedule changes every week.
This is way too much for me. I can't do 7 hours. But if you only teach 3 times a week, then...
Right. I suck it up.
It could work.
That's
right?
The way I look at it. I do roughly 44 hours from Friday early evening.
God.
No. I mean a weekend. I'm sorry.
A month.
I didn't explain that well.
A month.
No, I mean the block of time in a week. So I start Friday evening
and
I end Sunday late afternoon. That's approximately 44 calendar hours. During that, I work anywhere between 12 and 18 hours. Although if I do wait...
I mean the block of time. Yeah.
So I just suck it up. For 44 hours, it's a lot of work.
Yep.
And I mean a lot. finishing at 9:30 at night. I'm back at 7:40 the next morning. There are breaks.
So who do you teach, adults or teenagers? Or
yeah, it's anywhere for myself and my preference that my school has been very kind and cooperative with me. Youngest about 7 to 8 all the way up to IELTS, including adult learners.
Yeah.
But we have to do young learners. I won't do super low though. They are fun to substitute. They actually can be quite a joy. But everybody has their own preference. I know that you do, and
yeah,
something similar.
Yeah, I would definitely avoid young learners. Most of my teaching experience, which goes back 15 years ago, I've always taught adults or teenagers or young learners, not really any kids.
Right.
So like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm not qualified for it. I don't have experience in it. And it's not my preference.
Yeah, it's more of a preference thing. I mean, you can learn it very quickly through experience, but we all we think along the same lines, which is below a certain age, we just don't feel like it plays to our strengths or that it plays to our character, what we want.
For me, it's about my personality, really, like what I find enjoyable.
Correct.
I would be way more likely to burn out really soon. And I don't want that to happen.
Correct. So, yeah. But on the other hand, I have many colleagues who only work with young learners, and they're the opposite. They think it's just so much fun, and less stressful.
Absolutely.
And that they're, because they're so young, you get to see immediate developments with them, which is rewarding.
That's true.
But that's for you and me, Zanuck, not so much.
No, it doesn't work for me because I actually enjoy being asked questions and explaining things to my students, because I have that expertise.
And telling jokes, you know.
I have that expertise, so it makes me feel good about myself as well, that I can help someone.
Yeah.
You're also right that
we have more mature conversations.
Yeah, yeah, and the kind of jokes I can crack as well. It really matters to me, because I can enjoy myself, right? So it's all that. Everyone is different. We all have different preferences, so yeah, that's good.
There's no right or wrong. And in fact, probably with younger learners, because unlike the West, Vietnam is a young society. There's so many children here. So there might be more opportunities if you do work with the younger learners.
That's true. That is true.
Unlike we have negative birth rates in our countries here.
Yeah.
I mean, it is slowing down, but typically you see many, many more younger people having children and families here than you do in our countries.
That makes sense.
If you find, and we talked about this earlier off camera, you have to find a school, an institution that'll work with you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are, and I felt this pressure as a full-timer, and I really didn't like it, that you, to make your contractual hours, you have to basically do whatever they tell you. And as a part-timer, you have more flexibility, again, depending on the institution, but me and my colleagues who are in the same situation, we've made it clear what we're willing to do and what we're not willing
exactly.
to do.
Exactly. That's how I try to approach it. I try to negotiate it beforehand as much as I can, make it as clear as possible.
And not too many people, to be honest, are able to either have the sensibility or are aware of that.
I think it's because I know myself as a teacher as well. I know what I've done. I've got quite a good CV. I've worked in London. I've got good qualifications. So for me, I have some, how to put this?
Some pull.
I've got some assets, you know, assets. I have things I can offer. And that I think it puts me in a good position.
Certainly being taken more seriously than somebody who's right out of school and has a TEFL and is 24, 25 years old.
I even got past that native speakerism thing, I think, which bothered me a lot. But of course, there are a lot of jobs for native speakers only. But I think I can easily and quickly prove to my future employer that I have what it takes. I just need to be given the chance. That's all I need, you know, just let me show you how I can teach one lesson. And that's all you need to see. And if that person knows, you know, what teaching should be about, the methodology, and they of course they can of course assess my English as well. They are usually fine with it.
Idiom that we have in America: the cream rises to the top. So if you have that ability, they know it. Yeah. You know, they assess teachers all the time.
Absolutely.
And they'll take one look at you, you know, one lesson of you, and they'll know. Instant way, and you'll pull that, you know, immediate respect.
Sometimes it's a bit discouraging seeing these ads, you know, for native speakers only, because it shouldn't be about that. It should be about your qualifications, your experience. And yes, I agree, it should be about your English too. But how can I prove it? Like,
well,
you have to give me a chance to prove it, you know?
Like, I'm starting to feel that, pressure or trepidation that my age is going to become an issue.
Yeah, it could, right?
Yeah, because there's a strong preference for younger teachers here.
You're still young. Like, it's all.
Well, I mean, there's young, but there's young.
You're older than you were 10 years ago, that's for sure. But
but I'm also older than, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
but
twice,
like,
I'm twice
okay,
the
let's
age
put it let's
teacher.
Let's put it this way. Like, you come across as very sharp. Like, you know, like, you speak fast. You give good arguments. You're a good guest on a podcast. I mean, when you say someone is old, someone may have.
The point is that we're not working in a country or in a society that has strong anti-discrimination laws.
You are subject
to the whims of whatever, you know, whatever direction the winds are blowing.
That's true,
of course, being dedicated and being responsible is the way to deal with that. And the rest of it is out of your control. But we understand that, you know, in your instance, not being from an English or American, English Commonwealth or American country, for me being, you know, a little bit more advanced in the age, we just have to deal with it, that other people don't. But we do.
Yeah, we just prove ourselves. That's it, you know.
Correct.
And we don't give up. You know, we don't get discouraged.
Correct.
Well, like, right.
Yeah.
So, but it's true. Like, some of the ads could be like, we are looking for. They will say male teacher, male younger male teacher in her maximum in her 30s.
Yes.
And they will say it like that, which in our part of the world,
you would be shut down yesterday if you read an advertisement.
Yeah. Like, it would be considered very discriminatory, right?
Oh, they'd be shut down. You'd be hearing all about it in the press. There'd be demonstrations outside of it.
It's a different part of the world. We're not judging.
This is how life is here.
No one says that one is wrong or, well, I have my opinion on this.
Right.
But we're not in that position. I don't feel like that. I'm in the position to sort of say what's wrong and what's right. I live here, so I should.
We signed up. We know what we signed up for.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. And that's true for any international position, especially in teaching. If you have a problem with XYZ about how a country is towards human rights or towards a certain ethnic group or towards, you know, gender or women, then you shouldn't go there. We're not here to impose our cultural values.
No, we
are blessed to have the opportunity to live and work here.
Yeah, it's exactly how I see it as well. Like, I don't see it as a mission to show people that.
But a lot of younger people don't understand that, or are frustrated, and perhaps don't deal with that successfully because they don't have experience.
No.
And let's face it, the younger generation, and we were probably like this when we were younger. We always thought we were right. It's not until you fail many times and have a career and try and you see how hard life is that you chill out a bit and you start to, you know, understand I might not agree with this, but I'm still going to do the best I can.
It might still be worth
that's a mature attitude
pursuing it. Absolutely You have to weigh up your pros and cons and all that, right? And
but you're not going to get that until you're not going to get that in your 20s. I'm sorry, I've never seen it. Very, very rare.
All right, well. Okay, Glenn, so what else is there here in Vietnam then? So what else would you say are the best sort of attractions? Why should people visit Vietnam?
Yeah, so Vietnam, it seems to me, is becoming more of a hot destination. It helps that they're liberalizing the visas for the first time in many, many years.
So now when you say hot, you don't mean hot as in it's...
Well, I guess that's
the
true.
The weather is warm.
It is, unless you go to the mountains, but I mean trendy. A desired destination that you're hearing more and more about. You turn on YouTube and you're seeing all kinds of Vietnam travel and food shows. Vietnam is not one country. The people here are very modest. They say, oh, Vietnam, it's a small country. And I say, no, you're not. You're a big country. You're 100 million people. There are at least three Vietnams. There's the southern part where I live. Mm-hmm. There's the central part where you live. And then there's the northern part, which is mostly dominated by Hanoi.
And a bit different as well, right?
It is. It is. They even speak a different language. There's different.
Is it a different language or different dialect?
It is. I say language dialect.
Yeah.
But even for them, because the language itself is so hard, they have a hard time understanding each other.
Yeah.
I would compare it to an American speaking with someone from Glasgow or something like that. You know, that's how
that
it
would
is
be,
from
that
from
would
North.
Be impossible. Yeah.
Well, but I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it where they struggle to understand each other.
Yeah.
Culturally, it's different. The North is more traditional.
That's true, right? The South is more open-minded.
Everything, yeah. Especially in Saigon, it's New York. Da Nang is kind of in the middle.
In the middle.
But Hue is certainly more. Hue City is more traditional.
That's the one line.
Over the pass.
North of Da Nang.
Yeah, and that's the real Vietnam, I call it. But other than that, you've also got the South Central mountains, you know, Dalat, Dak Lak. You have the northern mountains where I have been to, which is Hazang, Sapa, Hai Long. You've got everything here. I mean, that's what makes it so desirable. It's got city. It's got, in kilometers, about 2,000 kilometers of coastline. In miles, it's roughly the distance from San Diego to Seattle.
The shape, look at the map, ladies and gentlemen. The shape is very unique.
North to south.
It's very thin, right?
Very thin.
Like a little bit like Chile or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would compare it to San Diego to Seattle, which means very, very different climates. It's cold up north. Even snow if you go high enough.
Really?
And Saigon is hotter than hell, pardon my language. It's always hot there. And then in the middle, very, very hot here, but with typhoons, more constant rain here than in Saigon.
Yeah.
If you want mountains, if you want history, if you want city, if you want beach, if you want trekking, if environmental travel, islands, there is everything here. Of course, the food is wonderful.
You are really selling it.
I think so.
No, but you know, I do have some listeners who are English teachers, yeah? So they might even get inspired by this because we have talked about teaching and I think they're getting some interesting information here.
It helps that we're presently on Mekay Beach in Da Nang.
It does, doesn't it?
It kind of helps to be inspired by looking at...
What a beautiful view.
Yeah, of endless beach line with new developments and tropical mountains right beyond it where you can go on the very famous motorbike ride.
And find monkeys.
Yeah, if from Top Gear, the Hai Van Pass, which I do every time I come here, Hoi An, 45 minutes to the south. I mean,
this
is probably the jewel of Vietnam. So whatever you want, if you want to be, as we say idiomatically, off the grid, and I had a friend do that who worked in Ha Tin, where there were no Westerners, not even potato chips. He did that for a year to find himself. You can do that. If you want to have the beach life, you can have that. If you want the big city life, you have Saigon. If you want the big city with traditional life,
take your pick.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity here.
And
that
the best way to do it would probably be just to try it all out and then see what works for you, what doesn't. And
yeah, take a trip here and spend, I would say, at least 3 weeks.
So you told me that of course. So you've been living in Saigon, which is that sort of less traditional, the more modern area, let's say. But you also mentioned to me off air that you might imagine, you could imagine living here in Da Nang, right?
Absolutely. So remember, Zdenek, I am a California beach boy at heart. I went to UC Santa Barbara 4 years on the beach.
Yeah.
Lived in San Francisco almost 30 years. A different type of beach where you die if you go in the water because it's too cold. But it's a beach. Beach nonetheless. So it's a strong draw for me.
I think
as I get older and slow down with the hours, the temptation to live here would be very high. For now, Saigon has, I think, for a Westerner starting out, seems to have the most to offer. Big city, easy to travel. I can be here in an hour and a half and for roughly $100 to $125.
There's a direct flight. A domestic flight from Saigon to Da Nang. It takes
almost
one
every
one
hour. Almost every hour. There's tons of them. And it is relatively cheap.
I've done it, yeah.
Yeah, you could stay not in one of these high-end places, but you can get a simple apartment for, you know, $500,000-$700,000 a night, and you're not far from the beach. So yeah, and then I play golf. So Bonnet Hills, I think, is the best in Vietnam. It's famous for the hand bridge, and there's a golf course below it.
I haven't been there yet. Yeah.
Oh, it's stunning.
I should visit that.
You should even just take a stop at the golf course just to see it. It's stunning. And just have a drink there.
Is that near that place?
Yeah, it's at the base of it.
Ah, okay.
It's at the base of it. And when we go off here, if you're interested, I'll show you some pictures of it. It's lovely. Yeah. Big golf destination here.
See, I'm not so much into golf. I love sports of all kinds, except golf.
Well, you're normal because it's a game that will make you crazy.
It's for me, it's like I've got that association. It's for rich people anyway. I think it's one of the most expensive sports.
Well,
right?
It is here, but in the US and UK, it is not. Because there's a spirit of community municipal golf. Here, of course, they do not have that. Everything's private resorts. But no, in San Francisco, I could play for €20, $25.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, of course, if you wanted the resorts, there's Pebble Beach and all of that where you're paying.
But you see, I would still pick tennis over it. It's just more interesting for me. But yeah, maybe I haven't tried, so I shouldn't judge. I used to play mini golf as a young child, right? What's the whistling then? What's happening?
I should mention this to your podcast listeners. Vietnam is probably the loudest country on earth. How should I say this? I'll give you an example. 2 days ago, we went to Cham Island. We're looking out at it. It's about 12 kilometers out. It's an island, folks, only 3,000 people. And what's the first thing you hear when you get there? Loud karaoke. You can't escape it.
Karaoke is omnipresent, yeah.
But loud, not soft karaoke. I mean, nightclub karaoke.
Why do you think they want to be so loud? Is it like are they trying to show off their singing skills?
I think it comes from the Chinese. I think that's part of the Chinese culture.
The Chinese are even louder, no?
Well, that's not a comparison that I want to get involved with. To me, they're both quite loud.
Stereotypes, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have got these guys. So
the security guys probably moving the motorbikes.
Okay, so somebody has a motorbike on the boulevard, and they're not supposed to have them there, so they just blow the whistle. But sometimes you get also these lifeguards, yeah? So you're not allowed to swim much here because it's quite dangerous. The current is quite strong. And I think they have had numerous deaths here. And that's why they take it quite seriously on this beach. So we've got these red flags everywhere. And then there are small designated area where you are allowed to swim. And there is always a lifeguard as well, looking after that place. And
thankfully, I'm not getting in. The riptides look quite strong today.
Yeah, they are, right. They are. But it's just a bit... It is a bit weird because I've never experienced anything like that. They're just like, they blow the whistle really, really strongly.
Everything is loud here, Zanuck.
And then you are like, they're like, oh, what's happening? What did I do wrong, right? And they're just pointing at the person who is swimming in the outside the designated area or something.
To relate this to teaching, one of the first shocks I had, actually, I made a comment to my teacher's assistant on the very first day of class. The very first day. I could not, the stereotype, and please forgive me for saying this, is, well-behaved Asian school children, that they're compliant, that they're obedient. And then you come to Vietnam, and certainly Saigon. It is not true. And I'll never forget this. I had a really cool TA, good dude. I could speak to him like a Californian. And I remember on break or after the first class, I said, is it always like this? He said, it sure is. You must get used to it. Yeah. So, no, man, these kids are rowdy.
To be honest, like I'm okay with this because I've experienced much worse. So I don't think it's that bad. Of course, it's not like Japanese people
who would be
well behaved. But
or even a Thai. You know, when I went to Thailand and went to school there, how the teachers, students would all bow to every teacher.
Yeah.
And that was in Thailand, which isn't far away, right? So I make a joke to my students, I'll put it on YouTube. Here, look at the Japanese students, look at the Thai students. See how they bow? Will you do that? They say, no, we won't. Absolutely not. But we're Vietnamese. We don't do that.
Yeah, there are differences. Like, sometimes when you come from Europe or America, you might think, oh, it's all the same, but it's not.
Oh, no.
Every country is so different, right?
Absolutely.
You have a country like not far away from here, and they're just different. They have different culture, different mentality.
And even regionally, you've got the more than three regions here, and there's noticeable differences between
them. Absolutely, absolutely. Which makes it really exciting, interesting, and absolutely highly recommended place to visit. Yeah, what else is there to say, Glenn?
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah. I mean, you have to take a good, deep look into yourself. I was very fortunate. I had contacts here from California who were able to help me.
Yeah.
And this became massively important during COVID when I was on my own, locked down for months in horrible conditions. I mean, real dire. So I had a support network. If you come here... without that, of course, you do that anywhere, it's going to be more difficult. So try to at least meet people or join Facebook groups.
That's what I did. I created, because I'm into board games, so I brought a lot of board games with me, and I tried to sort of create a group here a few times, and now I've got so many friends, you know?
Yeah, for me, it's like that with golf and bowling and some of my other hobbies. And that is very, very important, because otherwise you can't get lonely.
Absolutely. What's also interesting is it's both expats and Vietnamese people. So I like that mix as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Especially in Saigon, where I think there's more of a mix between Vietnamese and Westerners. It is so open-minded there.
Yeah. Lovely. Okay, Glenn. Wonderful. We haven't even talked about food. We could mention food, but let's leave it for another podcast.
I agree. Thank you for having me. I had a lovely discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. And take care. And if you're listening to this on YouTube as an audio, please give us a like as well. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you, Zinan.
And take care.
Take care now.
Thanks a lot for listening. For more information, visit my new website, teachersdenek.com, where you can find out about my speaking group for high-level English learners called the Achievers Chamber, and download my free course, Unlocking Your English Potential, 8 Secrets to Fluency. That's teachersdenek.com.